Welcome. My name's Adrian Beebe, and this is the 14th in the series of podcasts about the village of Kington Langley in North Wiltshire. It's been a long time coming, over 100 years. But at last, the historians of the Victoria County History Project have arrived in Kington Langley. Why? To write the definitive history of the parish. And you have a part to play. So in this episode, I'll be speaking to Dr. Louise Ryland Epton of the VCH about her work and finding out what she and her colleagues have learned so far. You're listening to Memories of Kington Langley.
Episode 14, The Clearing in the Woods.
It's early evening in Kington Langley, October 2023. We're in the village hall. Rows of chairs are laid out, chairs that are gradually filling with villagers keen to hear about the history of where they live. I'm counting around 70 people. Sitting in front of us is Dr. Louise Ryland Epton from the Victoria County History, here to update us on the project's research into Kington Langley. She's also been working on Kington St. Michael, Bremhill, and other villages in the area. The presentation's beginning. Now, we could stay and listen, but we're not. Instead, we're jumping forward 2 whole weeks. I've an appointment with Louise to find out about her and her work. And appropriately enough, we're meeting at the Swindon and Wiltshire History Centre in Chippenham. Louise greets me in the reception area and shows me to a small private room she's booked. She's bright, convivial, clearly keen to be talking about her work. I can't help thinking she'd make an excellent Doctor Who. So, to begin things, I ask Louise to tell me a little about herself.
Who am I? I'm Dr. Louise Ryland Epton. I am a freelance public historian. I work mostly for the Victoria County History Trust, but I also work for other people as well that care to employ me, and I research and write history.
And how did she get into the wonderful world of history?
I did a first degree in history and geography, but I wasn't then sure what I wanted to do. So I went off and worked in books for a while. Then I did an MA, but in IT, because this was the 1990s and everyone was getting into IT, but it wasn't really for me. Then I had started to have my family. And then as they were starting school, I thought, what do I really want to do with my life? And history has always been a huge passion, so I began an MA in history part-time through the Open University. Really enjoyed it and found I was pretty good at it. And the Open University were also generous enough to pay me to do a PhD with them.
And the most important question?
And are you in high demand on pub quiz teams?
Yeah, but they always ask the wrong questions. They always ask the wrong questions, but it's mostly history, very narrow bits of history, I know, to be honest.
The Victoria County History sounds very grand, but what exactly is it?
I think it might be the world's longest running history project. It goes all the way back to 1898, and the Jubilee of Queen Victoria. And it was supposed to be a history of all the places, all the parishes within England, organised on a county-by-county basis.
And its aim?
Is to produce a coherent history of every place in England, essentially. And some counties are now complete, some counties barely started, and here in Wiltshire are probably about 5 volumes off. We are currently working on a volume of Chippenham and the surrounding areas. So gradually over time, I've been given quite a few of the parishes surrounding Chippenham, and Kington Lanley and Kington St Michael were the last two to be completed.
How long has it taken Louise and her colleagues to write the parish's history?
To get to this point now, probably about a year. Where we are now is that we have completed a first draft. So this is a first draft. And at the moment, our draft history of Kington Langley is online. And we hope that lots of people are going to look at it and give us some feedback. And I would encourage anyone within the village who's interested to take a look and do that.
Where does one begin when writing the history of a parish like Kington Langley? With research. Lots of research.
How do you begin to research an area like Kington? What do you do? What are your sources? How are you going to go?
We are lucky in that we have a template to work to. There is a template, so I know how it's going to be organised. I know what type of resource they really want us to look at. So I have something to work to. I also have the experience of a number of different places before. And actually, Kington Langley and Kington St Michael have proved quite complicated in that I have gone to more places than I had anticipated. So I always anticipated coming here to the History Centre in Chippenham and going to the National Archives at Kew. But I've also been to the Society of Antiquaries in London. I've been to the Royal Society in London. I've had some sources from the Bodleian Library in Oxford. And I've also been to Wiltshire Museum in Devizes. Or I have done Kington Langley in collaboration with Dr. Mark Forrest. And he's been other places. He's been to Longleat looking at the Glastonbury Abbey documentation. And he's also been down to Taunton. So between us, we have covered lots of different repositories of information.
Louise is keen to stress that publishing a VCH history is very much a team effort. Yes, it's written by academics, but Kington Langley residents also have a role to play. As she mentioned, you can read the draft history online at the Victoria County History website, and you can comment on it. Here's what you need to do.
In the address bar of your web browser, type www.wiltshirehistory.org. This will take you to the Victoria County History's Wiltshire page. You'll see a menu at the top of the page. Let your mouse hover over Our Work. From the options that appear, select Chippenham Area Volume 20. Scroll down this new page until you get to a red box saying Read the Draft Chippenham Reports. Click on the box and at the bottom of the next page, you'll find a list of files of recently written histories. One of them is called Kington Langley, September 2023 Draft. Click on that and the history will appear. We'll repeat these instructions at the end of the episode.
Previous episodes of Memories of Kington Langley have focused on stories from the 18th, 19th and 20th centuries. But my conversation with Louise is delving much deeper into the past, right back to the Saxon period, the so-called Dark Ages. Those centuries between the end of Roman occupation and the arrival of the Normans. This is when the Saxons arrived on our shores and pushed west across our island. I can't call it a country because, well, it wasn't a country. It was a series of kingdoms and tribes. England, as we know it, did not exist. It's during this same period that the Vikings arrived and drove towards the south and southwest, getting as far as Wiltshire. King Alfred defeated them at Edington near Westbury in 878 AD. In the midst of all this activity, in the mid-900 ADs, that's when the first written record of Kington Langley appears. But the village wasn't called Kington Langley, as Louise explains, nor would it be for hundreds of years. So what was its name?
Basically, Langley, a long clearing. So this was essentially cleared woodland, a woodland clearing. This is a big woodland clearing, and it's carved out of Selwood Forest, which is a massive forest which stretches from Dorset all the way up to Chippenham. You had essentially a royal palace at Chippenham, a ville, and that was by the 9th century. So I imagine that those Kington and Langley would have been somehow formed around the same time in order to feed the estate when it was in town, because at the time Saxon kings were peripatetic. They would travel from one place to the next.
So are we talking King Alfred? Is he
one of
these people?
Yeah, that is who we're talking about.
And quite what constituted the village is also a moot point.
What I think is that there were two settlements that were created by 930, but probably 9th century, and there was one called Kington and there was one called Langley. Now, at this time, Saxon estates, they were supposed to be completely self-sufficient. I think that there was probably some insufficiency in the Kington estate. And I think that it was probably joined together with Langley to make a more cohesive, monstrous estate, if you like. And actually, we can see that already, because if we take 940 at face value, then already in 940, the charter is referring to a bit of Langley Burrell, a Peckinghall, and it's one of the few bits of the boundary clause that we know what it's talking about. But it's not in Kington Langley, and it's not in Kington St. Michael, it's over in Langley Burrell. And that was assimilated in because I think Kington needed a mill, and so they just took the mill at Peckinghall. But I don't think that was the only deficit, and I think bringing the two together made much more sense as a cohesive whole. But I think the two settlements, the villages, were distinct from each other.
That's a lot of information there. So let us try to summarise.
Over 1,000 years ago, around the mid-900 ADs, we have a huge swathe of woodland stretching all the way from Dorset in the south up to what is now North Wiltshire. The largest part of this woodland is Selwood Forest. To its north, Melksham Forest and Chippenham Forest. On the northern fringes of this wooded area is a sizeable clearing. Within this clearing are two small Saxon communities, one called Kington, what is today Kington St. Michael, and one called Langley, which seems to be a combination of today's Kington Langley, and all are part of Langley Burrell. Now, the Saxons speak a Germanic language called Anglish, what we call Old English. So Langley is spelt L-A-N-G-E-L-E-Y-G-H-E. These communities are likely to be providing produce to the Saxon royal estate in Chippenham.
In some of the reading I've done around this period, I've seen references to a battle taking place on Fitzhurst Hill. That's the hill rising up from the modern dual carriageway. Louise didn't come across anything that substantiated this, but there are tantalising hints.
Lots of people believed that there was some kind of battle at Kington St. Michael or Kington Langley somewhere, because it gets repeated. Aubrey mentions things like that. Then you get the Colemans mentioning things like that. John Britton mentions things like that. So it's something. And there's also lots of references to maybe Ethelred residing in the manor at Fitzurse, for example, or living elsewhere in the villages. So who knows?
The other important thing Louise mentioned earlier is 940 AD. Why? What's the significance? Well, if you're a regular podcast listener, you'll probably recall that 940 AD is the date of a Saxon charter that describes the boundaries of Langley. Here's Louise.
It's really, really hard to chart the Saxon history of the village. You mentioned the 940 charter, then that's not the earliest one that's talking about Kington or Langley. So basically, we have three different charters that refer to Kington Langley or Kington St. Michael. If you put them together, they don't make a clear narrative at all. And you talk about the 940 one, but even the 940 one is very confusing. It has what we call a boundary clause. So there is a description of the boundaries, but even that isn't completely clear. And also, what is the charter about? Although the charter was held by Glastonbury Abbey, it's not actually giving the land to Glastonbury Abbey. It's giving it to someone called Wulfric. Now, this Wulfric, we know that there was a Wulfric who was a brother to the abbot of Glastonbury and sometimes acted as his reeve. So was this gift to give it to Wulfric, who would then give it to Glastonbury? But then that's confusing because in 987 we have another charter, which is an estate called Kington, which doesn't have a boundary clause, but sounds a bit like it's Kington St. Michael and Kington Langley together.
That 940 AD charter is written in Latin. And if you're wondering why it's so difficult to interpret, try reading the translation. It's available online. The so-called boundary clause is impossible to interpret. It refers to streams, strips of ploughland, a spring, a deer leap, the stump of an elder tree, and as mentioned in episode 13, the hedge that Aelfric laid. All of this may have made perfect sense to Saxon residents of the area, but not us. The reason the 940 AD Saxon Charter contains this boundary clause is because the land is being granted by King Edmund to someone called Wulfric, who in turn gives the land to the very famous Glastonbury Abbey. So by the mid to late 10th century, Kington Langley is owned by a monastery around 40 miles away as the crow flies in Somerset. Indeed, so are many other villages in this area and parts of Chippenham. What's Glastonbury Abbey's interest in all this land?
It was money. It was money. They were the richest monastery in the country and they had vast estates across many counties. Langley wasn't their only estate within Wiltshire. Christian Melford was Glastonbury. Grittleton was Glastonbury. It's hardly surprising. And it's something that the king has given them. Maybe they wouldn't have chosen to be given Langley, but that's why. You know, they were in the ascendant.
Presumably the villagers were paying a rent or a tithe or something to the abbey, is that right?
So the abbey was benefiting from the revenues, yes, from the estates of Kington and Langley. But then I suppose you could say then things like the original chapel of St. Peter's is likely to have been built by Glastonbury Abbey. So it didn't just go one way.
That chapel, which predates the present church by hundreds of years, stood on land now occupied by St. Peter's cottages at the junction of Days Lane and Church Road, close to the village hall. One thing Louise talked about that I think really deserves more attention is Selwood Forest. It fascinates me. If you check today's maps, you won't find it. But over 1,000 years ago, it was a major feature in the southwest. So important, it even shaped local law.
According to Anglo-Saxon chronicles, Selwoodu, or Sallow Wood, what later became known as Selwood Forest, stretched from north of Frome down to Shaftesbury, and from Bruton in the west to Warminster in the east. To the north of Selwood were the royal forests of Chippenham and Melksham. This created an uninterrupted swathe of woodland stretching for around 40 miles north to south. Longleat Woods in Somerset is a small remnant of this great forest. To the ancient Britons, Selwood was Coit Mor, the great wood. That wood was a frightening place. Remember, this is a period when wolves and wild boar still roamed this island. The forest was large enough to slow the Saxons' expansion into the west, large enough for King Alfred to hide within it before launching his counter-offensive against the Vikings. Selwood, Chippenham and Melksham forests were important for hunting, timber, fire, wood and plants. When the Normans arrived in England in the 11th century, they brought with them the concept of forest law, which they applied to woodland like Selwood and Chippenham forests. Essentially, in order to protect and encourage game, like deer and fowl, to limit the felling of trees and to protect valuable plants like holly and ivy that were used for winter fodder, strict laws were applied to the local population. Because of these forest laws, peasants who lived on the land faced severe restrictions on their lifestyles. They were banned from enclosing their land by fencing or other means, as this restricted the hunt, and they were certainly banned from poaching. These laws were enforced by their own courts and officers. So-called forest inquisitions were held regularly. Punishments could be harsh, even death. On maps, Selwood is visible till the Elizabethan age, but in 1630, it was disafforested. Its legal status was changed to that of ordinary land, and it transferred into private ownership. This was the beginning of the end for mighty Selwood.
As we emerge from the gloomy depths of our lost Saxon forest, we're going to jump forward in time some four centuries to the mid-1300s and the Black Death, the epidemic of bubonic plague. We've heard a lot about how it affected places like London, but what about Kington Langley? Louise's work has uncovered some answers.
We're talking mid-14th century. The time period that it really hits Kington, St. Michael and Kington Langley, is 1348 to 1349. It gives us a terrible insight into the disease and the outcomes, because what we have is Easter 1348. There's a head count made of all the landless men and boys over the age of 13. And in 1348, we count 60. The next year, there are only 34 of those men and boys left. So we're talking about a drop of 54%. You can widen that out to the rest of the community. So we're talking at probably at least 50% of the community is dead within a year. I mean, it's just a terrible, horrible, horrible thing. And we can see in what happens over the next few decades is that the population does not recover. In fact, I think it's likely that it contracts more. So 1377, we have poll tax. So every man and woman over the age of 14 has to pay the poll tax. And for Kington, St. Michael and Kington Langley, we're only talking about 79 adults left standing. So, you know, it has contracted quite a lot. And then it continues to go down. And then it starts to climb again.
Another leap forward now. The 18th century. St. Peter's Chapel has fallen into disrepair or been demolished. The nearest church is Kington St. Michael. Indeed, it's another 100 plus years before the village will gain its own church. Kington Langley begins to develop a rather unsavoury reputation.
I think partly that my impression is that people in Kington St. Michael genuinely looked down on people in Kington Langley. There was a chapel, and the chapel disappeared in the 17th century. Would people have always trudged over to the parish church? They were certainly supposed to. So very quickly, there was a reputation for irreligion. And that was helped by the Langley Revel. The men of Langley had a reputation to have a party called the Revel. The Revel began as a religious feast. Well, you know, it was a time for fasting and praying, and then there would be a certain amount of feasting at the end. After the chapel went, it just became a party. And this party, according to John Aubrey, was, you know, the best in these parts. It was the most, you know, eminentist, I think, is the title that he uses it for it. And gradually over time, it becomes, I think, from what I can see, more and more raucous, you know. And in 1791, you know, there's some brawl that ends in someone dying. And then in 1822, we have a huge riot, essentially. But surprisingly, that riot doesn't actually happen at the revel itself, but a few weeks later. What happens in 1822 is that people from Chippenham have come up to join the revel. They said some not very nice things about local men. And then a few weeks later, the local men retaliate. And they retaliate by marching on Chippenham, essentially, with weapons and then just beating up everybody that they saw. And at the end of the day, two people had died and there were 30 injured. You know, it was a major riot. It was a pitched battle. If you read the accounts of it, it's the most incredible thing.
I want to return to the subject of the village's name. If the village began as Langley, the clearing in the wood, how did we get to Kington Langley?
Do you want to say more about the name?
Oh, my goodness, okay. The name. The name was originally Langley, but the creation of the civil parish in 1866 was really controversial with what the name should be. I mean, historically, Kington Langley was sometimes called Kington Langley, or it might have been called Langley Kington, or it might have been called North Langley. And all these terms were used to differentiate it from other bits of Langley, or to differentiate it within Kington St. Michael from the main settlement at Kington St. Michael. And then you had the complicated factor of a small manor called Fitzurst, which developed, I suppose, pretty much in the centre of Langley, so that sometimes that little tiny manor would be called Langley Fitzurst, or the name Fitzurst would also be applied to the surrounding area, so that sometimes the village would be known as Langley Fitzurst. It was very, very complicated. In 1865, the ecclesiastical parish was created. So this meant that the village was separated out. It was no longer in the same benefice as Kington St. Michael. It had its own vicar. And the name that they chose at that point was Langley Fitzurse. When they came to create the civil parish, the year later, they chose not to use Fitzurse, but rather to use Kington Langley. And it was hugely controversial. And I think most residents of the village at that time would have called themselves Langley Fitzurse.
According to historians, the original features of a place can remain fossilised in its name. And that's true for us. That ancient clearing in Selwood Forest, the Langley, may have changed its spelling, but it's still there. Kington we took from Kington St. Michael, a royal farm or something similar. But Langley, Langley's all our own. Indeed, the village's commons are likely to be a remnant of that long-ago woodland clearing. That's quite a thought. And that feels like the perfect place to end our conversation.
I'm good then.
Okay, and I've already gone off and talked far too long.
Exactly, how long you've talked for. 1 hour, 8 minutes.
My God.
No, that's done. I've done longer than that.
But it's been a fascinating hour. One that's changed my perception of Kington Langley and its distant origins. I'm captivated by that vision of a handful of Saxon timber frame dwellings clustered together in a large forest clearing. The smoke from their fires rising above the trees. So the next time you walk across the village's commons, just remember, you may well be walking across that ancient clearing. I'd like to thank Dr. Louise Ryland Epton for her time and her efforts. As I mentioned earlier, there's still time to read the draft history on the VCH website and make your comments. As promised, those instructions again.
Go to www.wiltshirehistory.org. From the menu, select Our Work. From the options that appear, select Chippenham Area Volume 20. Click on the box that says read the draft Chippenham reports. At the bottom of the next page, you'll find Kington Langley, September 2023 draft.
Give it a go. This has been Memories of Kington Langley. Goodbye.